Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, not in the Duckstown Studios today. I am actually traveling in the mobile Duckstown Studios. And joining me today, Josh Webb. Josh, 2 days in a row.
I know, and it's like 2 real days in a row, too. It's not like 2 podcasts in a row. It's actually like 2 actual days in a row.
Yeah. All of the kinks that have been thrown in lately, no longer duck season, no more wildness from 4-H shows, and you also throwing the third factor of you moving.
Yeah, no more moving. So,
Listen, I want to tell you something about moving. For everybody that's listening to this podcast, I'm going to give you a fact about Rocky LaFleur moving. From this point on in my life, if I ever move again, which I am very soon, everything goes with the house that I sell. Everything.
Yep. Look, I think it's the best way. I honestly do. I don't care if you've been there for a year or you've been there 20 years. You get what you absolutely need, and you sell every freaking thing else.
Two reasons for me. Number one, Roy Ann and her people, her family, they get into all these different furniture shows from her mom on the gift company. And so we can order furniture at a discount. She's giving me the ugly eye. She's in the truck with me, the stink eye right now. But we can order that stuff at like 30% of the cost. Not like cost at retail.
Yeah, yeah.
So if it's $1,000, we can get it $300 at the shows. That's the number one reason. But number two, there's no bigger fight in this world that me and my wife get into than when we move. Something's going to get broken. Something's going to get torn up. Something's going to get scratched. I am not Mr. Careful or Mr. Detail when it comes to moving. I just tie the crap down and let's go.
Yep.
Let me give you a funny story real quick. We were moving back from Alabama, and I would have done the same with the lodge when I sold it, but the guy didn't want everything. He didn't want all the furniture, and we wanted to keep some of it. When we were moving back from Alabama, there was this antique rice bed. The pedestal?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
All pedestal bed, rice bed. And so I tied it down in between two mattresses. I tie it as tight as I possibly can. Well, somewhere along the way, I can tell you exactly where along the way, about Winona, coming back from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, that rice antique pedestal bed flew out and broke a 1,000 pieces. My mother-in-law didn't speak to me for 2 years. That could have been the greatest benefit from it.
Well, I gotta ask you, would you rather move or would you rather paint?
I'd rather paint.
Oh, I hate painting. Gosh, I hate painting.
I don't
like moving, but I hate painting. And you know, it's okay if it, you know, the big like a wall, that's fine. But it's that little round trim and all that junk. Nope.
No, I agree with you on that. Let me give you one more. And this is the one that Roy Ann didn't speak to me about. On the way back from Muscle Shoals, I know that I'm going to come across as really dumb and really stupid by saying this, but I don't care. I laid a refrigerator down. You don't lay refrigerators down. You tie them down standing up. Hard lesson to learn. Very expensive lesson to learn. So when you lay them down, for some reason,
it does something to them, man. I don't understand what, but it does do something.
I did not know that. That was 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I guess, 10 years ago. I had no clue about that, but that was an expensive lesson for me to learn. I think Roy Ann didn't talk to me for a month over that one. Look, coming up in just a few minutes is, Josh 12?
Yeah, I think so.
Gloria Martin.
But, you know, people ask me that kind of stuff sometimes. What part's next? I don't know. After it gets past me counting on one hand, I'm done. I don't know. But I think 12 is, that sounds right.
10, 11, 12, one of them. Hey, speaking of 4-H, I was telling you yesterday about William Allen. You know, the whole story about, because that post on my personal page, I don't know why. I just typed out some things one day after Christmas while I was thinking about it, about William Allen. You got to meet William Allen last Friday.
Yep.
Great kid. One of the hardest working kids I've ever met. I don't know how to explain. He's a little intellectually disabled. Would that be a good word?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
He's a great kid. Well, I want to tell you the story. I don't know if I've even ever told you this story, Josh, about how William and Allen and I came across from each other. William Allen, I had seen William Allen on and around the farm. His dad had helped my in-laws out on the farm there for a while. And I got to be friends with his dad from just working around with him on the farm. Well, his dad got cancer in November, and he died within a month.
Did not know that.
Mm. Yeah. And so I stopped one day after his dad had passed. I stopped to check on him, see if they needed anything, and very nice people. So I guess from that point on, he and I became best friends, or he thought that I was his best friend for stopping to check on them. Now, let me give you a little backstory to this. After I moved to Oxford from the Delta, after I sold the lodge, I was I kind of got depressed.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of went into a silent mode. When you change your life that drastically, pulled out of the country, plopped in the middle of a city, and going from 6,000 square feet down to 1,200 square foot condo, it's in the middle of a city, it's a big change, and it affects you mentally. And it did for me. Now, throughout this time that I'm talking about, when I met William Allen, I'm just kind of walking through life in a dazed state. You remember that. I know you remember that.
I do. I do.
There's a lot of times
very
that,
well.
Man, are you okay? Or, I mean, are you doing okay, Rocky? I remember those conversations. All right, fast forward to that point to stop by to check on his family. Well, all right, so from that point on, every time I passed, and I have to pass his house to get to my in-laws, he would run out to the road. He'd see my truck coming, and, buddy, he is fast. He could run for the high school track team. He's so fast. And he would catch my truck and flag me down. Every conversation, I always went to his dad, and I'd lost my dad just previously to that. And maybe that was part of it, but he would talk to me about his dad dying and dad going to heaven. And, you know, we'd talk to each other. Well, eventually, he just started hopping in the truck and riding with me to the farm. And you saw him at the farm the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Working his little butt off. Oh, man. Well, and I mean, think about it, is my, right? My kids are hard workers at 7 years old, 7, 8, and 5. But he'll outwork all three of them. He's 11. He stays focused. He stays on task. And he knows exactly what needs to be done. Hold on. Let me tell you this. The first time William Allen and I ever met, I left this part of the story out. It was actually before I met his dad. We were going to check some, I was going to check some cows with my father-in-law in the UTV right down the road behind their house. We stopped to speak to his dad. Well, anyway, he jumped in the back of the UTV. This is a great part of the story. My father-in-law wanted him to get out. I said, man, just let him ride. He you know, he'll be fine. Just let him ride back there. And my father-in-law was more worried about liability. He didn't want him to fall out and get hurt. Well, anyway, we start going, start rolling down the turn row. And about that time, my father-in-law, he may have crapped himself. He saw the kid had fallen out and he had run over him. Well, every once in a while, he'll let out a little scream. He's calmed down now, but back then he let out a little scream every once in a while, but it scared my father-in-law to death. He thought he had run over him. So that was the first time we ever met. All right, so fast forward, back on the farm. He's going to the farm every day, and I see that, man, he becomes a natural with these animals. And so I asked him, I said, listen, I've got some animals that need to be shown at Dixie, and kid got emotional when I asked him if he wanted to show with us. I mean, he was all in. And it's been an ongoing story of him become kind of falling in with our family and doing and going with our family. But in that, what I wrote on Facebook the other day, it wasn't so much, you know, all that time I thought that I was doing as the Bible instructed, trying to help a needy family, trying to help a child that lost his dad.
He was helping you more than you realized. Yep. Yep. He was helping you more than you ever realized. Not just a physical work kind of way, in an emotional kind of way.
But you know, the thing about it is, every night when he jumps out of my truck, and as he's jumping out of my truck, you know, this we've been together now for about a year. Now, when he jumps out of the truck, and it's always, I love you, Rocky. I love you, Waki, is how he says it.
Waki, man.
Kind of the way I was wind it was, you know, that kid has meant more to me than anything that I've ever done for him.
Yeah, those are the kind of relationships and friendships, those kind of things. Those are the ones that you never really see coming, and that's another thing that makes them so special. I mean, you know, you just don't see it as a, you know, as something being. What it ends up doing is one day you finally realize just how important it is. But you know, that's what makes those kind of things really, really special.
Anyway, you ought to hear his teachers talk about him, man.
I'm sure they love
him at school.
Yeah, that's good that he's got that kind of support, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't have to be around him long to realize he's got a good heart. Yeah.
What'd he say to you? You walk in that barn the other day and said, whoa, who are you?
Yeah, whoa, he stopped me at the door. Yeah, well, who are you?
He said, are you his brother?
He never stopped moving while we were there. And we were there for probably, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes, and he never stopped moving. He was always doing something. And you know, and he was
I mean, in a work type sense. I mean, he was coming and going and moving stuff, and then he went outside and grabbed Waylon by the hand, and they went walking around looking at pigs and other goats, and then came back, and I gotta go do this, you know. He kept calling Waylon little man. I gotta go over here, little man. And he'd go off, and you know, and he'd go, and he was just working. He was just busy. Yeah, Katie and I talked about that for a while after we left the other day. Of course, Waylon loved it, you know. But he had a. He's a special human being. He really is. And I wasn't expecting him to be there the other day. When I got there, I didn't know. Well, that's why I wasn't expecting him to be there. Yeah. but he was in there. He's a good, good kid.
I was gonna say this, Josh. You know, with Mossy Island Outfitters, I spend a lot of time with kids sitting on the front porch, blowing duck calls, sitting in the duck blind and, you know, teaching kids how to identify ducks. And it just became a part of my routine. And what got me to thinking, you know, as this relationship with William Allen evolved, you know, there's kids around us every day that need somebody. And hunting is a great thing to bring them into.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you think about it, you know, when you... A lot of times it's uncomfortable for somebody, it don't matter man or woman, it's uncomfortable to step out or reach out and try to, you know, spend time with a kid or somebody, you know, in that type of situation. But why not do it in a hunting situation where you're comfortable, where you know your surroundings, where you know, where you can control, you can't control the animals, but you can control the physical environment. Why not do that? I mean, and I'm not saying you got to take them deer hunting or duck hunting or whatever. I mean, there's just crap. There's endless things. I just wrote a column for a newspaper about that, about how February is probably September and February are probably the best 2 months ever to get a kid or somebody new or somebody in that type of situation outside. There's all kind of things to do, hunting and fishing and outdoor related, that doesn't constantly drive home the, well, we didn't see any deer or, well, we didn't kill any ducks type thing. I mean, you know, this time of year, go rabbit hunting, go squirrel hunting, go fishing. I mean, there's plenty of warm days in February. And September is, and I do every single year, I write an article in September and in February stressing that.
Yeah. And isn't it always well, thrown and you've around done that so too generalized, with the, though? Saying, in my sense, I was kind of thrown into the fire. With them being right there by my side with their dads, that was kind of a indirect way of doing it. You know, and it gets thrown around in the hunting world so much. Grab a youth and go. Grab a youth. You know.
Yeah.
Let's get the youth involved.
One thing that bugs me about that is, yes, it gets watered down. But one thing that really bugs me about it is the only time or the times where that's really, really highlighted is around youth weekends or youth weeks. And I think that's crap. I mean, they're great. I'm not saying that part's not great. But if that's the only time that you're taking the time to take a kid, then you're really not doing what you need to be doing as an outdoorsman, whether it's hunting, fishing, or whatever. I mean, I know that, you know, it doesn't always work out where you could take a kid with you in every situation, every day that you go hunt or fish. But there's more times to do it than just a youth weekend.
Well, Josh, what you got planned for the rest of the day?
Well, I'm waiting on the. I don't want to talk about the weather, but I'm waiting on the rain to stop. Where was I? I was somewhere. Oh, it's when I was in Texas. I got picked on by somebody that I just met, a podcast listener in Texas, and they're probably listening to this, which is fine. But I would say picked on. But we were riding around. They mentioned me, starting every conversation talking about the weather. I vowed to not start at least as many conversations with the weather. But right now it's raining. It's kind of nasty. I needed to get out and fly the drone around over some
some pieces of property and take some pictures and stuff, but I'm not going to be able to do it today. So it's probably going to be a boring paperwork kind of day. That's the way it looks right now.
All right. Well, have a great rest of the day, but we need to get to that interview with Martin now. All right, guys, like I told you on the front end of the podcast, Martin is on the line. Martin, how much rain did you get last night? Because those clouds were covering y'all up for a long time.
Oh, man, I really don't know. It's the time of year where I really don't care. So if it were duck season, I would be checking rain gauges and airports and all that stuff. But I'm going to guess from what I saw this morning out riding around, that it was somewhere between 2 and 3 inches. Because it rained like a cow peeing on a flat rock around here for a while. It woke me up. I know that. So to wake me up, it's got to be doing something. And it wasn't no thunder and lightning. It was just rain. I mean, I just remember waking up and saying, golly, it's raining.
I mean,
y'all, I guess
say
it that, just kept raining.
Yeah, I mean, y'all stayed right there up under that yellow and dark green grief all day yesterday and last night.
Yeah, it was. It done messed around and come a rain down through here. So that's just what we needed for our river and everything. You know, even though duck season's over, it's time for its water to start going somewhere, man. I'm tired of it. I need to get back down where I can catch these crappies in it.
Are you coming to Grenada anytime soon? Grenada, Enid? That, I mean, I shouldn't say those names on, you know, you got to keep that hidden.
Oh, everybody knows about them places. I probably will. I don't know when just yet with it still being kind of, you know, right in the middle of show season. This is just a tough time, but I really like coming over there during the post spawn when them fish have done their deal and they're moving back out offshore and oh man, them fish over there, they try to just absolutely break your rod. And for a crappy white perch, sockeye, whatever you want to call him, that they're a different breed of animal there. Them suckers are mean that y'all got over there. They mean. Just
Man,
but they taste good, don't they?
Golly.
They wear a cornbread jacket. They wear a cornmeal jacket better than just about any of them, you know? So, whew, man.
Well, look, speaking of show season, you know, last year's where I actually met you for the first time face-to-face at the NWTF. Are you going to be there this weekend?
I'm not going to be at NWTF. I'm going to be out at I'm going to be in Salt Lake City this weekend. So I'll be out at the Western Hunt Expo talking, you know, doing some sponsor stuff and hanging out, talking ducks with those folks out there that hunt that Great Salt Lake. And, you know, I'm actually really looking forward to it because I've already booked the trip. I'm going to get to hunt the Great Salt Lake this coming up fall. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's always been one of those, you know, just kind of, I don't want to call it a bucket list place, but just somewhere I needed to see, you know, it's one of those kinds of deals. I need to go out there on that man-made wonder on how salt, you know, or I say a non-man-made wonder how a salt lake got out there in the middle of Utah. You know, I'm interested. I'm interested to get out there and stomp around in that thing and shoot what I hear is a bunch of green-winged teal, which I am A-okay with. So.
Green-winged teal, shovelers, and golden eyes.
That sounds just like North Louisiana.
You know, that's the first time, I guess if I was out there in probably 14 is when I was there. Lucky enough to get invited by Jay Paul and Drake's Migration Nation back when they had their show. And anyway, I never in for the life of me imagined that many ducks sitting in one spot. It is unreal.
That's what I hear. It's just a big, giant raft of them out there. And I need to see that. I need to be a part of that. That's where I'm at with it. Maybe, who knows, being out there, maybe some old lost cinnamon teal will come in with them green wings. I guarantee you I'm going to be looking over every bunch hard for one, for something that looks different. I can assure you that.
You know, I killed my – I
killed that golden eye, and I was going to bring him back home and get him mounted. Well, I put him in one of my smaller suitcases, and man, we started smelling something in that Suburban. And those ducks, a lot of them are feeding on those, I guess it's called brine shrimp. Those little bitty small shrimp. Oh my God, that sucker stuck. I had to throw the suitcase away. Throw the duck and the suitcase away.
Sucker smelled like Captain D's, didn't it?
Oh my Lord. It was awful.
Oh man.
But it is definitely something. It is a bucket list that everybody should knock off.
Yeah, there's a few things that, and that's one of them. One of my big ones is I want to go to the East Coast and shoot a pair of marsh black ducks over there on the East Coast. And then at some point, somebody's going to talk me into being something real stupid and get out there in them layout boats with them eiders and stuff. But I ain't there yet. We're going to have a custom-built layout boat for men like me and you. I mean, I see some of them things them boys get in. I can't fit in that. Like, that ain't going to work. So,
here's the problem with me about getting in those pumpkin seed layout boats. It wasn't the getting in them that was the problem. It's wearing a size 15 shoe and trying to turn your foot upright in them. You have lay in them, and your feet either have to go in or out. There's no up and down.
You got to be Donald Duck.
Yeah. I mean, because when I sleep, like in a hotel and stuff, you always woken, you know this, you walk into a hotel room, and the sheets are always tucked, like, super tight.
Oh, yeah. I feel like you're going to break your toe trying to get your feet up under.
Exactly. And, man, when I get into bed, and the first thing I do is kick as hard as I can to loosen those sheets up. And that's what a pumpkin seed, those layout boats feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. That reminds me of that Seinfeld episode. Are you a tucked or untucked? No, I'm untucked all the way. I don't want something holding my feet down like that. That drives me nuts. Ugh, I can't stand being confined like that. That's a good way for me to lose my mind.
Man, I love that episode. You know, George couldn't make up his mind.
Do I tuck or untuck? What do I want? What do I want? Well,
and then he thought he made the maid mad.
Yeah. That is a good one.
Oh, man.
That's when he killed. Yeah, that's where he ultimately kills that old girl's birds, ain't it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he dumps the water on her pigeons or whatever it does. That's what, yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy, I've watched those shows way too many times. Gosh.
One of the greatest shows ever.
I guarantee it is. It is good stuff. But
well, have you talked to anybody that's killing any geese?
I've talked to a few, but they're, you know, I keep in touch with Tony and them throughout the deal, but man, he said it's tough, man. It's just he said the reports were right. There ain't a whole lot of juvenile birds, and you know, them doggone adult snow geese have got a master's education on everything. So if you ain't, you know as well as I do, if you ain't got some of them suckers to lead the rest of them down, that's tough. And that's an awful lot of work for a maybe. So you don't have to worry about me chasing them. I'm going to stay on these crappies.
Man, you just don't see the – usually by this time of the year, you see all kind of social media marketing pushes by these guys that guide these hunts, and they're just laying them out. And this year, it's been slow.
It's been awful quiet, yeah. Oh, I'm seeing some, you know, for anybody listening that's planning on them and waiting on them. And we've got quite a few of them right now around here that I'm assuming are the returnees getting ready to start picking their way back north. So if you're north of us, there's a good little wad of them here in North Louisiana getting ready to head back that way. I will say this, something cool. I ran into the other day some telemetry trucks and for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or maybe they were state. I didn't really look at the deal on them. All I knew is they didn't have flashing lights on top, so I wasn't worried about them. You know, I don't mind talking to the nerds like myself. Them with the badges, though, I don't want to go incriminate myself for any reason. But right here in North Louisiana, there's a little pack of transmitted speckle bellies that are hanging out right here right now. So they were out there trying to find them, and I was like, I said, y'all know about where they're at? I was thinking, I ain't ever killed nothing with a radio transmitter on it. But this, you know, we had speckle belly season until this past Sunday here, but who was I kidding? I wasn't going back out chasing them things. But it was cool to see them out there with their antennas and stop, talk to them, and, you know that they're hanging out right here. He said they had just moved up from somewhere down there just south of Catahoula Lake. I don't remember where he said, but so they're starting to pick their way back north too, you know. So that was last week when it was, you know, 70, when it was really springtime here, 70 degrees and 50 degrees. And now we're on this, you know, I don't know, PMS winter or whatever's going on here, where it's 70, 40, 70, 20. I mean, just gosh, it just won't make up its mind. So, but yeah, I thought that was pretty neat to see that that's on. And did see a few blue-winged teal this morning. So I guess everything's starting to trickle back home, trickle back where they need to be, what came this far anyway. So probably ain't going to be as cool of a spring as it normally is. But, you know, taxidermy season's alive and well around here. Boy, them blue wings are pretty. Ooh, they're pretty.
I was waiting to see if you'd say it.
Oh, yeah, it was. I'm telling you what, seeing them pretty old blue wings like that, it'll make you think, oh, man, boy, nobody would ever know. I got 28 gauge here, wouldn't nobody ever know. But you just look at them and smile and know they'll be back in about 6 months. So.
Hey, Martin, you brought up an interesting keyword in something you said just a few minutes ago. Catahoula Lake. Have you followed what's going on with that at all?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I've seen what's it. It's now to what court is it headed to now? Is it the Supreme Court of Louisiana?
Yeah. Supreme Court.
Because the appellate court upheld the ruling that. Man, I get it. Like, if, you know, my two cents on how all this works is if that river water naturally pushes up onto your land, then I get it. Like, I run backwaters all the time. I'm not going to get out and jump onto your land to hunt or fish or do anything. You know, I'm not going to put my boots in the water on your piece of property. But, dadgum it, if I can stay in my boat and do it, then that, you know, I mean, and I'm not going to come up to the bank. I'm not going to come out where the water pushes out into your pasture. I ain't going to do none of that. I'm going to keep my distance. I'm going to bide my time. I'm going to be out there where you don't even worry about me. And the thought that somebody owns that water is, that's just hard for me to figure. You know, I mean, I just can't. And it cost us a lot of revenue in this state because of it. Because of all the fishing tournaments that won't come here and, you know, all these little small economies that get a big boost when there's a fishing tournament on Toledo Bend for, you know, Bassmasters or Major League Fishing or FLW, whoever, you know, you name them. That's a big deal to those little communities, man. All them grocery stores are paid up and, you know, ice and drinks and whatever, you know, what have you. And to lose that, man, that's going to really, you're going to start seeing some of these little fishing communities start looking like ghost towns, man. And that's a sad deal, you know. And the same goes with Catahoula Lake with them ruling that the thing is whatever. It's a river, so that all of that's floodland and you own all the way up to the channel of the river. I mean, somebody down there needs to figure out what the heck's going on. And, you know, and I'm not saying that.
River runs through Catahoula.
I can't even remember what the name of that river was. It ain't Old River. It's one of those that you don't really hear of that causes all of it. But it's just a freaking nightmare. You know, and you talk about just like we were talking about Salt Lake or the Great Salt Lake. I mean, you talk about starting to lose Catahoula Lake as a place to duck hunt. I mean, that for a lot of people, that place is on a bucket list. I mean, there's so many things written about that place going back through history. Like, I mean, you start losing them opportunities on that place. I mean, it's just, it really is pretty sad, you know. I mean, it's, I just hope and pray that the Supreme Court can figure out a way to get these water laws in this state written correctly. Because, yeah, I love Louisiana. But, man, these water laws we got are dumb. Just dumb.
Louisiana is the opposite of most everybody in the United States. And a lot of people have learned that the hard way, you know, coming from the Mississippi side and running up a channel off the river on the Louisiana side and getting a trespassing ticket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or down there in that marsh. I mean, how you going to know which ditch is which? Like, how you know which ditch is private land and which one's on? And then you got them boys out there putting up stakes and cross ties, cutting them off where you can't get through them. I'm like, man, is it really? I mean, are we really to that point of being a game hog where that, you know, I mean, and I know some of it was done because people are just stupid and go in there and tear your crap up. But it goes back to what we've talked about 100 times before. It's just an overall lack of respect in today's society for people's stuff. I mean, even, you know, like I said, I know on the river if I'm going on somebody's private ground to go around something or whatever, I don't go through there and tear up their stuff. I don't go hang nets in their stuff. I don't put lines out in their stuff. You know, I'm just not going to do that. And because that's not my place, and you know what happens if the river falls out tomorrow, I ain't leaving something hanging 20 foot up in somebody's tree on a piece of property. But that's, you know, you got them other people that go in there and take it as their own and then just, you know, take a dump on it and leave. And you know, and if we would show respect all across the board at in and out and everything else, then we wouldn't even have these laws, because people wouldn't think nothing of it, you know. But still, the thought that just because you own the ground that's up under that water don't mean that I can go across it in my boat. That's just a stretch for me. I just, you know.
But see, here's the thing about it. Here's why I think it's going to get turned over in the Supreme Court, because the federal U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the states own the water just as they own the water that's under the ground. If you flip it over, they own the water on top of the ground.
Yeah.
Own the water up under it, and the state owns the water on top. It's just like me and you. If we had a house and we shared a pond, and our property line ran to the middle of that pond, anywhere in the U.S., you could come to my side of the property and fish, because I don't own the water. You don't own the water.
Yeah.
We own the dirt up under it, but we don't own the water. The state owns that. You can come to my side and fish right up under my pier, and I couldn't say anything about it. People have tried, you know. But in Louisiana, it's different for some reason. But if they're going to base their ruling off of past U.S. Supreme Court rulings, then they're going to overturn it.
Well, I hope that's the case. And, you know, in this state, let's call what Louisiana is. There's a long line of questionable politics in this state. So I'm sure you can follow a money trail to figure out where all that's coming from. You know, it probably wouldn't be hard to figure out on whoever zoned it like that the first time, you know. So, but, yeah, I mean, hopefully you're right. I mean, I'm hopeful that they'll do the right thing. And then, you know, because if they don't, then none of these big things are ever coming back here as far as big revenue generators like Bassmaster Classics and all that kind of stuff via our water. They'll never come back. And you know, that's tourism dollars and everything else that helps these people. And you know, I want them back in our state. I want them to show off our state because it's cool as crap, man. We got stuff here nobody else has got. And, you know, I'm proud of it. And hopefully we don't, you know, hopefully we don't lose too much by it. You know, I think that's one of them things. I think that you'll see, you know, go through in Arkansas when they limit the number of days is how these small towns are affected. You know, I think that's what we're seeing here is how these small towns around Toledo Bend and all that are affected by not having any major revenue tournaments come through there. So, you know, hopefully that gets sorted out and everything happens for the best. So we'll see.
I'll say this, Martin. Whenever you see something ruled on strangely on the local and let's just say regional or district level,
lot of times, all you got to do is follow the money, just like you said.
Yeah, turn around. Yeah, just turn around and look where that trail leads you.
I'm not saying all the time.
Not all the time.
Yeah, but if it most of the time it benefits one or small group of somebody's, all you got to do is follow the money. It was paid for and bought.
Yeah, it's kind of making me wonder too. Like on this, I saw that they're asking for public comment, and I'm going to go to it whenever. I think ours here is like February 28th, but where they're talking about reducing the our teal limit from 6 to 4, even though there's no scientific evidence that there needs to be a reduction from 6 to 4 on blue wings, you know, during September. Which, first of all,
what's the deal with that? What is the deal with that?
I don't know if it's outfitters down south. I don't know. I will say this, that on our place that we hunt a lot up here in North Louisiana, we self-imposed ourselves to a four-teal limit during teal season. A lot of reasons for that. One, we don't want to be out there forever. The difference between four men shooting 16 and four men shooting 24 is a lot of times an hour worth of hunting.
Huge.
And, you know, it's a huge deal for pressure. When you generally are in a drought time where there's not a whole lot of water, you need to limit your pressure anyway. But so we did that ourselves. And I'm not saying, you know, I think the state should leave it just like it is at 6. And if you want to mandate yourself to only shoot 4 like we do, fine. I mean, we do it and we're happy with it. We leave there with our, you know, with our chest stuck out and smiles on our face. But I don't know if it's some of them thinking that, you know, and there is a lot to say about hunter satisfaction. When people kill a limit, whether it's 4 or 6, for them to say that I shot a limit, it makes them, gives them a badge of honor or, you know, something. So I don't really, you know, I don't really know what it's about. That's another one that seems kind of weird, which is why I'm going to go to that meeting to figure out what they're doing here. Like, all right, now y'all tell me why y'all are proposing this change, because I need to, you know, if you can give me some good, decent, you know, a good chain of causation or chain of thought on why you're doing this, I'm in. I mean, I'm interested because we did it ourselves. Like, you know, and I would say here's why we did it, to limit the amount of time. It's super hot. Let's get in, get out, and move on, and everybody's happy. I think what that'll really affect is the guides in South Louisiana from going from a 4-bird to a 6-bird limit. When you would get a lot of people that would travel in to shoot them and do that, you know, maybe they don't come for a weekend now if they can only kill 12 birds each. Who knows? You know, I don't know. It's a strange regulation, that's for sure. I'm interested to see what they say, and I'll be able to report back fully after that meeting, because I'm going to it. You know, my days of sitting around being quiet on a lot of this stuff are over, so I'm going to get out there on these things and get involved. When they want a public opinion, I'm going to go be the public, so we shall see on that.
Hey, Martin, you heard any more reports from the north? You know, Ramsey and I recorded earlier for his Thursday podcast before you and I recorded, and you know, we were talking about the Prairie Pothole region and how dry it is.
Yeah, I've heard nothing good up there. Nothing good coming out of there.
All right, let me pick the scientist brain just a second.
Mm-hmm.
I want to pick the scientist brain that you have. Barring a miracle blizzard happening, I mean, it's pretty crisis level up there right now. Could we see within 5 years, 45-4-33 season on the horizon?
I think so. I think what'll happen is it'll take more than a 1-year dip. So I think if this year is just an anomaly, which it's not going to be, because seasonal wetlands are just that. They're seasonal wetlands. And every now and then they have to go through a period of dry to increase their productivity. they've got to dry up. They've got to grow grasses. They've got to grow, get a good substrate in. So that way when the rains come, then they fill up with water over the grass, which has a good invert substrate, which then means that the bugs that the ducks need to eat to get the calcium and make the eggs, it's all a big cycle. So they have to refresh themselves from time to time. And it's the good Lord taking care of things the way he would have had it taken care of from the start. So, you know, so drying out is a necessity of a seasonal wetland. If it happens one year, I don't think it'll be that big of a deal. I think, you know, it'll be, ho-hum, whatever, moving on. And the ducks are resilient is the other thing a lot of people don't give them credit for being, is they will try to nest and nest and nest until they just realize that I can't raise youngins and get back south if I have to. So they're going to keep on doing their thing, keep on doing their thing. And a lot of them are going to fly north. A lot of them are going to go into Canada. Some of them will nest around the boreal forest and, you know, get up there in those big lakes, and they'll, you know, they'll take care of themselves and do their things. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, more mallards and even some other little dabblers, gadwalls or shovelers or teal or something start nesting in kind of the urban golf courses areas, you know, and stuff like that. So I do think it's a very real possibility, and I think the more as we as hunters continue to gripe about how poor it is, the more it gives kind of credit to the fact that this probably is going to come. And I think I've said it on here before, though, be careful what you wish for, because in the extreme non-conservative minded world that which we live in today, once we lose days, we may never, ever, ever, ever get them back, ever, no matter what the duck numbers do. It doesn't matter. So just saying, be careful what you wish for on all of that. If you're fine with hunting them 30 days the rest of your life, then keep pushing forward and writing people and doing all that. But, you know, I'm fine with going down to 60 and going down to 4. That would be my first suggestion, is go keep 60, go to 4. Just so people have increased opportunities to go. Because if we start limiting the amount of opportunities people have to go, that's less chances. All of a sudden, the greed kicks back at a man. All of a sudden, he doesn't want to take a kid who could be going on his first time, or take any somebody else that's on their first time. And they're like, well, I only have 30 days, so I'm going to make the most of it. And, you know, they don't start sharing that. We're 60, you got plenty of time to share that throughout the time, you know, throughout the season. So,
you brought up an interesting point. Let's say that you could fit Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Bootheel, Missouri, all in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought this up a minute ago. If you think about the number of people that stay out to kill one more, two more, or three more, four more, whatever it may be, some minute number as it pertains to a limit. You know, everybody's got four piece. Well, you stay out there at 12 o'clock to kill two more per person. You got to all mm-hmm. four of those by 9:30. That's 2.5 more hours of pressure that you're putting
on. Oh, yeah. And let me tell you what my experience has been on that. It's 2.5 more hours of pressure, and the shots, the patience begins to wane, and the shots taken are longer and further and not, it ain't like it
That's
was
right.
early in the morning. You start getting antsy. You know, I was that guy that would stay there till I got my six. I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. Then as I got a job that allowed me to hunt every day, which I understand that part too. Like, if you can't go, you want to make the most of your opportunity. So if you ride the hole on Saturdays and Sundays till noon, 1 o'clock, I ain't hating on you. It's, you know, it's those of us that are fortunate enough to get to do it all the time that, you know, that stay there till 1, 2, 3 o'clock just to get 6, 6, 6, and, you know, this, that, that. What, I mean, do you really eat that many? I mean, I eat a lot of them. I'll say that I probably eat more ducks than most anybody else I know, and I still have enough to make it through to the end of season. Like, you know, because I eat them during the season and I freeze them at the end, so, and then start getting rid of my crappies from the end of last year. And, but I eat them as quick as I can kill them, and, man, it's just, you know, it. You don't need that many, and I don't know what the six is all about. You know, I don't, and I don't know you know, I'm the kind of guy that I can tell you generally by about 8 o'clock if it's going to happen or not. And if I don't think it is, I'm gone. I ain't too proud. I'll leave there. My tail tucked between my legs. I'm like, nah, it ain't happening today, boys. Let's get out of here. You know, on those slow, you know, southwest wind days at about 3 miles an hour, I'm like, nah, it ain't happening. Let's go.
You know, Pat Pitt talks about this all the time in his club up there. You know, people sit out in the pit just for one more duck, 2 hours of putting pressure, one more duck per person. What
ain't gonna happen to me?
At the end of the day, what does it really accomplish besides a good picture?
Nothing at all. You can ask people I've hunted with. We'll be 3, 4. You know, 5 shy, and I have that one line. Once we get there, and I'm like, I count them. I'm like, all right, y'all ready? And they're like, well, we got 5 more. I said, yeah, but I'm going to tell everybody we killed a limit, son. And because as good as, I mean, I'm like, hey, that's good enough for me. Like, man, if there's 5 of you there and you kill 25, odds are you had a chance to kill 30. Let's go to the house. Like, let's get the heck out of here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
No, go ahead. I'm sure
odds are you either had the chance at 30, you lost a couple of cripples, you did this, you have put your impact on what was designed for us to put our impact on, so let's get the heck out of here and come do it again tomorrow, or, you know, do it in 2 days, whenever. So,
hey, true or false, you meet a lot of, I'm going to say new duck hunters. True. One of the least understood things about duck hunting is pressure to a new duck hunter. True or false?
Very much true. Pressure is, in my mind, when you're hunting little small private ground tracks and this, that, the other, is aside from ducks in your area, temperature, weather, whatever, the pressure is the single biggest factor on moving ducks at a local level. And I say that like, so we got, you know, and I'm, don't hear me saying that you got to do this. I am blessed beyond all measures and more, far more than I deserve to have enough places. If I wanted to, I could hunt a different place every day of the week. I could hunt a different blind if I wanted to every day of the week and never have to run it back twice. I don't do that. I'm just saying I could. And you see it. The reason that we're able to, even on slow years, generally stay on them pretty good is because we can rest that. We can bounce from spot to spot. But I tell you what we don't do is we're not picky. We're going to shoot the first ducks that come in, whether they're ringnecks, buffalo heads, mallard drakes, pintails, whatever. Don't care. It's duck season. It ain't mallard season. It's duck season. Let's get our ducks. Let's get the heck out of here. So whatever that looks like, whatever that smorgasbord of a limit looks like, that's what we're doing, or not even a limit. Whatever that hunt looks like, that's what we're not going to. We're not going to let ducks come in and out of the decoys that we're not going to shoot to get out of there. Because every duck's got a purpose, and we use them all, every one we kill. You know, merge, get a free pass, and stuff like that. But the rest of them, we do stuff with them. So we get in, get out. In a perfect world, every day we're done by 8:30, regardless whether we've shot our quote-unquote limit or we're just done, to limit the pressure, to let the ducks come in, to let them rest. And while the people around us are sitting there just hammering them and pressuring them till lunch every day, we're steadily, while their numbers are dwindling, ours are increasing because we're just get in, get out, get in, get out. And like this year, we had a self-imposed 1 wood duck limit. You can kill 3 by the law. We put 1 on it so that our woods stayed full of ducks and we had live decoys for what few mallards were here to find. And that's what we did, and we were able to keep mallards in our green timber most of the year because of it. You know, so if you take a sacrifice on the front end, you'll generally reap the reward for all 60 days versus, you know, 10 good shoots. That's the way that we try to operate, you know. And on public, too, like the times I hunted public, if I killed my ducks, I wouldn't stay there and, like, hold my hole or do anything. I just get out of there. Sure, come over here. And then let these ducks get, you know, come kill yours, and then let these ducks do their thing, get back in here, and let's keep killing these suckers, you know? So, I just, yeah, the less time we're out there hunting them, the better. I mean, that's just the general rule in my opinion. So
even non-hunting pressure, you know, I see people that lease ground and, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon doing their scouting run, they'll drop UTV right through the, you know, to the edge of the water. See how many ducks
come out. Yeah, they make that Michelob run over at sunset.
and they, the little understanding of how that affects those birds.
Oh, one of my biggest pet peeves is when you're scouting as flushing birds. If you ever tell me, yeah, I'm going to go scout, and the next thing I hear is that, well, I jumped about 300. You will never scout for me again, ever. Not never. You are officially fired from being the scout. You're out. Get you a good pair of binoculars. Make sure your ears work. If that don't work, go get you some of them hearing aids, Walker's game ears, whatever. And you get downwind of the ducks, of where you think the ducks are. You get on top of something you can see on, and that's how you scout. You don't get within a quarter mile of them. You don't need to be that close to them. Get out of there.
Yeah.
Well, I've had it happen before. Oh, man. Shoot. Make me so mad.
Well, Martin, I'll tell you, the day didn't go, it went great. Not where I thought it was going to go, but it was a great podcast. Guys, read up on pressure management. It is one of the key tools of killing more ducks. Understanding pressure. Understanding the pressure that you put on your birds. Even on public ground. I know a lot of people listen to this hunt public ground. Get in and get out.
Yep.
Just like Martin said, get in and get out. But Martin, thank you again, man. I appreciate you joining us every week to talk about different topics.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Anytime, and anybody listening, same deal applies. If y'all got anything you want us to get on a soapbox on, put it down there in the comments whenever we get done with this. We'll bring it up for discussion. We may be wrong, but you know what? We're going to believe in it.
Yeah, I'm not. I promise. My wife tells me every day that I'm not always right.
Oh,
she reminds me all the time.
Amen, brother. Amen. Hey, if we was I'll tell you this too. If we was always right, there wouldn't have been no reason for Jesus to be on that cross. So we're wrong way more than we're right. So that's the, you know. But at least we have fun and we can laugh at ourselves.
Oh yeah, I agree. Well, man, thank you again. We want to thank all of you for listening to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.